everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your life and well-being and the well-being of your family and greater community. I want to thank you for joining me today, and we're going to have another really profound conversation with Dr. Martin Paul. But before we do that, I just want to welcome people who may be listening for the very first time. I'm so glad to have you here. I hope you'll be coming back week after week. And to help you do that, I invite you to go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman. And Cheryl is S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L, Selman.com, or my Facebook page is What Women Must Know, so you can like me over there because I post all of these shows, and I also send them right to your inbox if you opt in to my website, and that's the way you'll be sure to get them every week. And I also want to mention that I have a second program on Progressive Radio Network every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. It's called The Love Code. And that is a show dedicated to upliftment and transformation and spiritual awareness with many spiritual teachers and people on the path. So hope you'll be tuning in then, because that will really support your expansion and upliftment, and we'll be sharing some healing strategies as well there. Okay, I want to focus on our conversation today. You know, we live in a world that never existed before. We live in a world that is filled with more and more Wi-Fi technologies. We're entering into the 5G reality. And we are opening up a Pandora's box. Most people are totally unaware of what we are getting exposed to and the serious and long-term consequences from this technology. So to help us understand what's going on, to paint the picture that will allow us to fully recognize where we are going and how to protect ourselves is my guest today, Dr. Martin Paul. So let me just share a little bit about Dr. Paul, who has been on my show before, so I'm so glad he is back with us. He is a professor emeritus of biochemistry and basic medical sciences at Washington State University and author of the acclaimed book, Explaining Unexplained Illnesses, Disease Paradigm for Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Multiple Chemical Sensitivities, Fibromyalgia, Post-Traumatic Stress, and Gulf War Syndrome. He published an important paper on how electromagnetic fields, known as EMFs, impact the cells of our bodies. The study was honored by inclusion at the Global Medical Discovery as one of the top publications of 2013. So it's always such a pleasure and such an honor to have Dr. Paul back with us on the show. So I'm so happy to have him here. So, Dr. Paul, welcome. It's wonderful to be speaking with you again.
Delighted
to
be here.
We have talked several times before. You have been so enlightening and so profound. And since, I think, our very first conversation, you are really now considered one of the most highly respected experts on the subject of EMFs and now 5G. And I know you lecture all over the world on what you have been discovering and what you've been warning people about. Before we go into the big story of EMFs and this emerging 5G technology, I'm wondering how you arrived in this world. What was your journey that made you focus on this as a passion and a purpose and a mission?
Well, I'd been working on chemical issues in environmental medicine before I got involved with the EMFs. And I was aware that multiple chemical sensitivity, which you mentioned earlier, is caused by chemicals that act by a particular pathway that involved the activation of what are called NMDA receptors. And I also knew that there was a similar condition called electromagnetic hypersensitivity, often abbreviated EHS. And so I thought that the the electromagnetic fields, the EMFs, might act through the same pathway, through the NMDA receptors. And I kept looking to see if there was any evidence for that, and I couldn't find anything. And then finally I stumbled onto what the actual mechanism was. And it was quite interesting because the actual mechanism for the EMFs is they activate some things called voltage-gated calcium channels, or VGCCs. And what's interesting here is that both the NMDA receptors and these calcium channels work through excessive calcium in the cell. So they have very similar physiological responses in the cells of our bodies. And that was, you know, this great aha experience. Okay, now we know that things like these, you know, sensitivity syndromes can be produced by excessive calcium. In fact, there's other evidence that that's true. And that we and that most of the effects of the EMFs go through these voltage-gated calcium channels and excessive calcium in the cell. So that turned out to be a gigantic breakthrough because, you know, biology is so incredibly complex. When you don't know what these things are doing, you can spin all kinds of stories about things, but you have no idea whether they're right or wrong. Now we've got this thing sort of stapled in concrete, you know, that this is the major way that the EMFs work, and immediately many, many things become clear when they were very unclear before.
And that's always been the problem when people have this hypersensitivity to the EMFs. There are many people who, when they walk into a room, they can get headaches, they can feel fatigue, they can feel tingling. There are all sorts of symptoms that many people are complaining of when they're, you know, in front of their computers or Wi-Fi or in a Wi-Fi environment. But no one really, well, no one in the United States anyway gave it any credibility because they couldn't figure out what was happening. And all of the literature from our cell phones and our smartphones and all the other devices never really clarified, never had any information at all about any risks involved, although they will tell you not to keep the phone next to your body when you look into your agreements and warnings in your on your phone if you dig deep into the information that's there. But what you have given is an understanding and a pathway that explains how all of the consequences and imbalances and ultimately the chronic health conditions that are generated as a result of exposure. So let's break this down. Let's go to the very beginning and help people understand when we talk about EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, what they are, what emits them, and the connection between our Wi-Fi world and what you have put together as a pathway that explains why we are at such risk from exposure to these frequencies.
Okay. Well, the things that I think most of us have been most concerned about have been the microwave frequency exposures, because we have huge, many different wireless communication devices expose us to microwave frequency EMFs. And so, you know, we're talking about cell phones, we're talking about cordless phones, we're talking about cell phone towers, we're talking about Wi-Fi, we're talking about smart meters, we're talking about very large numbers of other wireless communication devices, all the ones I just mentioned, we know have very substantial effects on us, there are also problems to some extent from broadcast radiation. And what turned out to be the case, and this was shown in the first paper that I published on EMFs, was that a lot of different EMFs over a whole frequency range, and they actually, now we know, range all the way from the millimeter waves that will be used with 5G down through microwaves, through radio frequency, through intermediate frequencies, through extremely low frequencies, including the frequencies from our power wiring, so 60 hertz in the U.S., 50 hertz in many other parts of the world, and going all the way down to static electrical fields and static magnetic fields, they all work to produce this activation of these voltage-gated calcium channels. And this is a really stunning finding, and it is very, very surprising that you get the same target for all these different things. So finally we understand why so many of these exposures produce very similar effects, and I think that's important.
So I want you to define voltage-gated calcium channels, because I'm sure most people listening don't know what that is at all, and why it is so critical in understanding why we are so vulnerable to these frequencies emitted from our Wi-Fi devices, whatever they may be. In fact, all of them. I mean, there's no safe device out there that works on Wi-Fi. So let's first define what a voltage-gated calcium channel is and why it's the critical piece of the pathway that is causing so much harm and creating all the chronic illnesses. And I just want to say, I looked at a list that you put together of all the conditions that are generated as a result of exposure to EMF through this pathway that you're going to explain, and that includes cardiovascular disease, it includes autism, it includes Alzheimer's, it includes autoimmune diseases, infertility. What have I left out?
There are massive effects on our brains, leading to neurological and neuropsychiatric effects. And there are hormonal effects, and all these things, and it generates oxidative stress, which is involved in almost every chronic disease that you can think of. And they're gigantic things. And let me just say about the cardiac effects. Cardiac effects are somewhat different from the things that we usually worry about. They all involve the electrical control of the heart. And we have now in our society an epidemic of young, apparently healthy athletes dying in the middle of athletic competition of sudden cardiac death. I think that this is probably caused by the EMFs, and we know that the kinds of changes in the control of the heartbeat that occur, particularly with chronic EMF exposures, can lead to these kinds of changes. That doesn't, of course, prove that these are all caused by that, but I think that's the probable explanation. So they're just incredible number of things that are going on here. So let's look at the. Let's get back to your question now. How does this thing work? Okay, how does it work? So these voltage-gated calcium channels, which I abbreviate VGCCs. Are in the plasma membrane. Every single cell in our body is surrounded by a plasma membrane, and these channels are in the plasma membrane such that when they're activated, they open up and they allow calcium to flow into the cell. And normally, calcium levels outside the cell are about 10,000 times what they are inside the cell. And in addition to that, the charge across the membrane tends to drive calcium in as well. So you have a tremendous force driving calcium into the cell. You open up these channels, you get huge amounts of calcium flowing in the cell. And that causes large amounts of problems, especially when this thing is chronic. And that's basically the fundamental problem that we're facing here. And every single cell in the body, as far as I can tell, have these VGCCs in them. They don't all have the same type. They don't all have the same number, but they all have VGCCs. And so it's probably the case that any cell in the body can be impacted by the EMFs. So normally, as I say, the calcium levels are kept very low in the cell, and the only time these channels are activated are when you need to generate a calcium regulatory response. So you let in some calcium, you get a regulatory response, and then usually the calcium is chucked out of the cell quickly, and the channels close quickly. So with the EMF exposures, it's a very different situation. So we are in great peril for that reason. Now, the way in which, so these are what are called voltage gated. They are regulated in the normal physiology in our bodies. So in the normal function of our bodies, they are regulated by the electrical charge across the plasma membrane. And so they have in that channel, and I apologize for the complexity of this thing, in that channel there's a structure called the voltage sensor, which detects these electrical changes across the plasma membrane and can then open the channel in response to them. When you look at that structure, and it's, you know, the three-dimensional structure of these channels are known. The structure of the voltage sensor is known. And when you look at that structure and you look at where it is in the plasma membrane, and you look at a couple of basic laws of physics. One of them is called Coulomb's law, and the other one's called Ohm's law. The physics tells you that this voltage sensor is absolutely stunningly sensitive to the forces produced by these very weak EMFs. And that's why you get the activation of these channels in response to weak EMFs, is that the voltage sensor is just stunningly sensitive to these weak electrical forces. So the industry has been claiming for years that these electrical forces are too weak to do anything. And now we know exactly why the industry has been wrong all this time. And tragically, the problem is, of course, that our safety guidelines are based on this fiction. So, you know, we are being severely attacked by these EMFs because of that, and so we're in extraordinary trouble.
You know, when you describe an image, we'll go on to the next part of the question. But when you explain it, the image I got was like a garage door opener. You know, so we don't see what frequencies are emitted out of a garage door opener, but it has an effect and opens the garage door. So it's like exposure to these EMF frequencies act to me like a garage door opening on these very sensitive VCC channels, letting in so much more of these calcium ions, which are really communicators, right? When we talk about the calcium that's let in, the role of the calcium, it's like communicators giving instructions to functions of a huge number of physiological functions that enables the body to work.
Yeah, and these channels are important for function, particularly in the electrically active organs in the body, but also in others. So the VGCCs are essential for the function of the brain, function of the heart, function of other muscles in the body, the whole nervous system, of course, but they're also important in many, many other parts of the body as well. And so these are things that, you know, that have important physiological. The studies that have been done have shown that you could block or greatly lower the effects with calcium channel blockers, and so people ask, well, maybe we can use calcium channel blockers to protect us. Well, you may be able to do that to some extent. And in fact, I've been told that is possible, although there's nothing published on it. You can't block these things and still function, you know. So you could just partially block them. You can't really block them, you know, because they're too important. So that's one problem, and that's a thing. But you know, when you talk about calcium, and calcium very important, calcium signaling is very important. And so when you have excessive calcium signaling, that's one of the kinds of things that happens when you are exposed to the EMFs. And that's been known, actually, for, I don't know, a good 40 years now, that you get excessive calcium signaling following EMF exposure. But there are other things that happen when you have too much calcium in the cell, particularly if it's in there for a long time, which can happen with the EMF exposures. And you get another pathway which involves excessive nitric oxide and superoxide and peroxynitrite, which is a potent oxidant. And that, in turn, peroxynitrite breaks down to form highly reactive free radicals, and together they produce oxidative stress, and they also produce inflammation. So you have this pathway that you know produces lots of problems, and those also have roles in producing these damaging effects, pathophysiological effects. So what you can see from this is we know a lot about how the system works, and of course the industry spins this tale of nothing's going on, and if there was something going on, we don't have a foggiest idea how it could happen, and that's totally wrong.
And I just want to add one other thing about that issue. I'm sure people are asking, well, if we now know this, if it's established that this is causing harm, how come the government still allows it to happen? And what I have found, to my horror, is that there is no government agency overseeing the health effects from EMFs. The control of the EMFs is in the FCC. Is it the FCC? It's considered the control of EMFs and rolling out cell phone towers and 5G is in the realm of allowing fair trade to happen, but there is no one, the FDA, the EPA, no one is in charge of looking at this issue of risks and harm from EMFs, and therefore it's like the Wild West. We're on our own. There is no one looking after us, and that is one of the serious problems that is facing our country right now. There is no government agency responsible for health effects from the EMS. That's what I believe. Is that your experience with that as well?
Well, I mean, they're supposed to be responsible, but they're not. I mean, I think, you know, what you're saying is de facto that's true. Both the FCC and the FDA are supposed to have roles in this thing, but they're not doing anything. And they put out statements I think Dr. Shuren at the FDA put out a statement not that long ago stating that the overall evidence doesn't support I don't remember his exact words, but the overall evidence, you know, doesn't support the idea that anything is consistently going on there. And so but he gives not one iota of that overall evidence. And we know there's vast amounts of evidence to show that's completely wrong. So, you know, this is what we have. We have statements that are put out that have no connection with the actual scientific reality. And the safety guidelines, which to this day are still based only on heating effects, so they don't take into consideration any of the effects that have been shown over and over and over again to occur at levels where there's essentially no heating at all, so they can't be due to what are called thermal effects. And they just ignore that whole literature. They ignore the VGCC mechanism. They ignore everything. And it's just bizarre beyond belief. I mean, it's, you know, this is like it's like Kafka on steroids.
Yeah, that's exactly the image I had. People find this hard to believe, but it's true. It's true. It's like the industry. There's such a combination of misinformation and the amount of huge profits being made. And the revolving doors between industry and the government that is just supporting this rollout, and we're going to talk about how the rollout is continuing. But before we go there, I would like you to talk about the risks to children, the risks to pregnant women, the risks to newborn, and the risks to young children who are exposed to Wi-Fi frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me say there are four reasons why children are more sensitive to EMFs than adults, and generally the younger they are, the more sensitive they are. One is that they have much smaller bodies and much smaller heads and much higher surface to volume ratio, so their tissues are much more exposed. And particularly the brain, which we're concerned about, the skulls are much thinner, and then they have much, as I said, higher surface to volume ratios. So there's a lot of exposure there. That's one issue. Then, in addition, it's been shown that the stem cells are particularly sensitive to the EMFs. And in general, the younger the child is, the more stem cells they have. And as they get older and older, the density of stem cells drops lower and lower. So adults are much less sensitive than young children for that reason as well. And then there are two other reasons why children are much more sensitive. One is that the developing brain is very, very sensitive to the EMFs, and we'll talk about why, I think, a little bit. And the other is that the tissues, and this is, let me say, I want to give credit to people. Dr. Deborah Davis has talked a lot about the fact that the tissues in young children have much more water content, extracellular water content. That makes the EMFs able to permeate into those tissues and have larger effects as a consequence. And the other person I want to give credit to is Dr. Belyaev, who's done a lot of work on the stem cells that I mentioned before. So that's the reason. So we're very concerned about children, and there have been statements, for instance, there were two statements put out by groups of scientists and or physicians expressing specific concern about Wi-Fi in schools, and these things have just been ignored. I mean, it's just bizarre beyond belief that people who should know better just ignore them.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit before the show about the problem of addiction and how the brain is being altered. You know, a lot of people think that is just, a fantasy, but it isn't. And can you just say a little bit about the other problem when you have exposure to these frequencies and to the gaming and to standing, being on the computer all the time, whatever you're doing on the computer, especially for children, not just children, probably it's for everyone, but children are always so vulnerable. How is altering our brain to make us literally addicted to devices or addicted to exposure to these frequencies which come through the devices?
Well, it's both, actually. And I think, Dr. Henry Lai, 25 years ago, published a whole series of papers with some colleagues on... that showed that a lot of the neurological effects that are produced in the brain, and this was done in animal studies, are produced through the release of dynorphin, which is a endogenous opioid. So this is a normal component in the brain. You release it, and what happens then is it activates the opioid receptors in the brain. And he also showed that if you block the opiate receptors, that you could block a lot of the neurological effects that were produced. So this strongly suggested then that you're getting, very much the same kind of response that you get with opiate drugs, and which go through, of course, the same receptors. And in fact, there's now a lot more evidence on this, that the whole spectrum of things that goes on in response to not only opiate drugs, but cocaine and amphetamines and nicotine, all those things produce a whole spectrum of changes. And the same spectrum is produced by EMF exposures. So we have very strong evidence now that, EMF exposures are physiologically addictive and produce exactly the same kind of pattern that you get with the opiate drugs. Now, and these other drugs. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is that there's also evidence, some of it that Dr. Lai published 25 years ago, and some of it in the more recent literature, that these addictive responses can be learned by classical conditioning. And what that means is that the addiction to the EMFs can in turn lead to physiological addiction to the devices that put out the EMFs. So we're in an absolutely insane world here. And it's just crazy. I mean, this is just nutso. And so people are becoming physiologically addicted to their smart meters, to their smartphones, to their tablets, to Wi-Fi, this is a very, very scary world, and it's not just scary for that reason. It's scary for many, many other reasons. So anyway, can we could we talk about some of the things that I'm most concerned about with this?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay.
You bet.
Okay. There are a whole bunch of things that we know are going on in response to the EMFs, and three of them are, there are probably at least a dozen of them that are extremely well documented, and I've particularly documented eight of them in great detail. The three that I'm most concerned about, one has to do with the neurological and neuropsychiatric effects, and the second has to do with the reproductive effects, and the third has to do with the impact on the DNA of our cells, including our germ cells, so that we produce mutations that will impact newborn babies. These are things, each of these, I think, are extraordinarily serious. So let's talk about them. The neurological and neuropsychiatric effects have been studied many, many times, and they include can't sleep, tired all the time, can't concentrate, I'm depressed, you get headaches, you get memory dysfunction, you get anxiety, depression, that's very important. And so there are a whole series of these things which are which have become epidemic, not only in our society, but in every single technologically advanced society on Earth. And so they are extraordinarily concerning. Now, when you study the effects of the EMFs in animals, you find that you get effects on the structure of the brain. And all these things generally start out slowly, so you don't really notice them. But they get more and more severe with longer times of exposure. So months and years of exposure makes things much, much worse. The same kind of EMF. And initially, based on both the human studies and the animal studies, if you stop exposing before things get very, very severe, things go back to normal over time. So they're not; they can be reversed. If you keep exposing and things get much more severe, they become irreversible. And that seems to be true with both the neurological and neuropsychiatric effects, and it seems to be true with the brain effects in the animals that we think are the underlying cause of all of this. So given the fact that we have these already in apparently a fairly advanced state in our society because so many people are complaining about these things. I've tried to estimate, okay, we know that these things get more severe with time, and we know in animals that the brain structure effects get much more severe with time. How long will it be before just our brain function just totally crashes? And I've made a rough estimate on this based on both how fast things go in animals and how fast they go in humans from the occupational exposure studies that were published way back in the 1970s and 80s in humans. And I estimate that something like 5 to 7 years, our collective brain function will simply crash. And if and when that happens, we will just simply go into utter chaos because everything's dependent on our collective brain function. Now, that's a rough estimate. I want to emphasize that. It could be off easily twofold in either direction. Could be shorter, could be longer. So it's a rough estimate. But, you know, but that's not a long time. And it's not, I think one thing that people have asked me, well, is it already too late? And I don't know the answer to that because, you know, when you look around the world and you ask, has there been any country, in the world that's really doing what needs to be done? And you really don't see any signs. You know, certainly all of the countries that are closest to the U.S. in terms of, being modern, industrialized, technologically advanced countries, we're all going in the wrong direction. And we've seen some countries do some things that are good, that are backed off from this, but they're relatively minor. And in general, we're all running as fast as we can in exactly the wrong direction. So I just don't know. And let me just say that estimate is based on the exposures we already have. It's not based on further rollout of 4G, on 5G, on putting radar units in cars all over the place. So we're exposed to that, and many, many other wireless communication devices that are being proposed, and where processes are going. To try to move forward on them. I think, we're in an extreme situation, and we're taking risks of the sort that no rational society can possibly take. Now, that's just based on the neurological neuropsychiatric effects. Let me talk about one other effect that I'm particularly concerned about, and that's the reproductive effects. Okay, we know that EMFs impact... In animals and in humans have both been studied. And what you find is that there are impacts on the structure of the testis and of the ovaries. You find that those have been studied in animals. You get lowered sperm count. You get lowered sperm motility. You get lowered sperm quality based on other kinds of measures in humans and in animals. You also get lowered female fertility. That's really only been directly studied in animals, where you get lowered numbers of eggs. You also get increases in spontaneous abortion. You get decreases in each of the three types of sex hormones, the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. All three of them go down, and you get lowered libido. So we've got all this stuff going on, and all of it, of course, will have the impact of lowering fertility. Okay. Now you ask, how far along are we in this process? And what we know is that sperm counts in every single technologically advanced country on Earth have dropped to below 50% of normal. Now, I can't tell you for certain that that's caused by the EMFs, but what I can tell you is we simply don't have any other hypothesis that makes any sense. And we know the EMFs are, all over the place in all of these countries. I mean, these are, rampant all over the place. So that's the obvious interpretation. Now, what's also true is that reproduction has dropped to well below replacement levels in every single one of those countries, with one single exception. And in 2016 figures, the reproduction on average had dropped to approximately 73% of replacement levels. So we're looking at potential, you know, already the levels have dropped quite low. Now you can say, well, we got too many people, maybe that's fine. But what happens in animals, and this was shown by Magris and Zinos over 20 years ago, is that when you expose, this was done in mice, when you expose young pairs of mice to exposures well within our safety guidelines, you get an immediate drop in reproduction, and that over a period of 90 days to 150 days, depending on what the exact exposure levels were, the reproduction crashes to zero, or essentially to zero, and in such a way that it is apparently irreversible. Okay. So what does that tell you? It tells you the effects on reproduction are cumulative, and they become irreversible. And so I've been expecting to see crashes in reproduction in human populations. Up until recently, I hadn't seen any. They were lower, yeah, but I hadn't really seen evidence of a crash. Now I think we're seeing that evidence in three East Asian countries, each of them densely populated, high-technology countries, which presumably means they have, you know, relatively high exposures to the EMFs. And those countries are Singapore, that had a 31% drop in reproduction between 2016 and 2017. Macau, which isn't really a separate country but has separate statistics, and it had a 26% drop in reproduction between 2016 and 2017. And South Korea had an 11% drop in reproduction, same time periods. The Korean government has been trying to stimulate reproduction, knowing that they had... Now, each of these already had among the lowest reproductive rates in the world already in 2016. So now they appear to be crashing. And in South Korea, the government's been trying to stimulate reproduction using public policy. It's totally failed, as you can see. And the Korean figures for the first 6 months of 2018 are out, and they had another drop of approximately 9%. So I think
wow.
I think we're crashing, and I think that, as I say, the EMFs are the probable cause, but we cannot be absolutely certain of that. We just simply don't have another explanation for it. So I think that all of the technologically advanced countries will be following those countries off the reproductive cliff quite soon. You know, based on what's been happening over time, and particularly with increased exposures, of course, things will go much, much more rapidly. So I predict with 5G, it could easily, you know, increase the rate of this whole thing by, you know, large factors, like a factor 5 or 10 or something. I mean, it's quite possible that you could have very, very rapid effects on these things. So we're taking risks of the sort that no rational society on Earth can possibly take, period. It's just outrageous. It is unimaginable that these things could be going on. The other thing I'm concerned about has to do with mutation rates. We know that there are effects of the EMFs on the DNA of our cells, and that includes the DNA of sperm cells, including human sperm cells, based on exposures that we have all the time. Wi-Fi, cell phones, etc. And so you know, these things are, and the DNA effects are known in other contexts to cause mutations, important mutations. And so I'm very concerned about that. I don't know how far along we are in this. I've looked for data on it, and I really haven't found any good data on what's happened to human mutation rates over the last 15 or 20 years. You know, you'd expect they would have gone up a lot, but there's really no good data that allows us to say either that is happening or that it's not happening.
Can you just say something about prenatal and postnatal exposure?
Yeah. Let's talk about ADHD and autism. I think both of those are probably, and let me just say, the autism story, I think, is a complex one. And it's one where, at least to some extent, reasonable people may differ. So I think that, the critical exposures in autism are things that occur during the late prenatal period, so the months before birth and then the few months after birth. And during that time period, there is a tremendous fast development of the brain, and specifically what's going on there is that the neurons in the brain are making many, many synaptic connections to other neurons. So the average neuron in the brain has about 1,000 synaptic connections to other neurons, and if you don't get the right connections, of course, the brain isn't going to function properly. And what happens is that there are five kinds of mechanisms which are known that regulate the formation of the synapses, and each of them is regulated by intracellular calcium. So that tells you something profound. Mm. What it tells you is that any time you have excessive calcium in the cell, it's going to screw up the formation of the proper synapses in the brain. So I think that's the central mechanism of both autism and ADHD. And I think that that EMFs during this sort of perinatal period, late prenatal and early postnatal period, are critical causal factors. And I believe, and this is something where clearly this is not a universal point of view, I believe that the EMF exposures are the primary driver of the autism epidemic. I also believe that chemicals have roles, and chemicals, as I think we discussed before, can also act to produce excessive calcium in the cell, working through the NMDA receptors. So you can get you can have effects from both, and they both can then produce these kinds of problems. So,
well. I have a fire alarm thing going on.
You got a fire alarm going off there?
So I'm just going to, it's just a test, so I don't have to evacuate, but that's what's going on. So I'm going to have you just continue a little bit with some of the strategies that we can start implementing in our lives to support our body's resilience to these frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think should be obvious is that one really needs to avoid exposures to the extent that's possible, and of course it gets more and more difficult to do that as more and more devices come out all the time. But I think what you wanted me to talk about was nutritional approaches that might be useful in this process. So let's talk about those. I think that given what we know about the way in which the EMFs work, and we talked about some of the pathways that were involved in this thing, there are two important regulatory systems which can help buttress our bodies against these kinds of effects. And let me just say, neither one of these is a magic bullet. I mean, when we have these exposures, you will still have effects, but they will be lower effects. And there is evidence on this, by the way, as well. This is not just hypothesis. The two regulatory systems that I think are of great importance. One of them is called NRF2, NRF number 2, and I published a paper on that in 2015. Which you can pull off of the PubMed database if you wish. Nrf2 has many different Nrf2 is a it's a transcription factor, so it regulates something like 500 genes in the human genome, and it produces antioxidant effects. It lowers inflammation, and the inflammation is an important part of this process. It lowers and it also improves mitochondrial function. That's another important thing that we haven't talked about, and all those things are useful. And it also actually lowers the effects of excessive calcium in the cell, which is maybe important as well here, as you can see. So there are a lot of things there that kind of come together, and I think there are many different nutritional components that raise Nrf2. Almost every single they include a lot of the phenolic antioxidants. They include they include carotenoids. They include the long chain omega-3s in fish oil. They include a lot of terpenes that are made in plants. There are a lot of different things that raise Nrf2. They include the unusual forms of vitamin E, the gamma and delta forms. And so there are lots of things. And they also include things like vitamin D and melatonin is another thing that can help with this. So there are a lot of things that will help with it. And exercise can help with it. And so, a lot of possibilities here. There's another regulatory system, which I think is also important, which called AMPK. And that works at a different level. It works it's a protein kinase. It modifies a lot of proteins in the cells. And it makes, and it produces a lot of regulatory effects. Including improving the mitochondrial function, which we talked about a little bit, and lowering inflammation, and so it can work along with Nrf2, I think, to help with things. And and there are also a lot of nutritional factors, some of them the same factors, but some different ones that raise AMPK. And some of the foods that are particularly helpful in raising one may also be helpful in raising the other, and there are a lot of them of those foods that we know about. So that's I think magnesium can also be helpful, and largely because magnesium deficiencies make the thing worse, and many of us are magnesium deficient. So it's good to raise our magnesium levels. So that's sort of a brief view of some things that might be useful. Yeah, and let me just say one other thing. I'm a PhD, not an MD, so none of this should be viewed as medical advice.
Right. Thank you for that.
Okay.
I want to also just say some of my favorite supplements, in addition to the ones you mentioned, are broccoli seed extract, which generates sulforaphanes. So your cruciferous vegetables are really helpful, as well as the supplement broccoli seed extract, and molecular hydrogen. That seems to be very effective, be profoundly effective too. So look, we're really facing a tremendous crisis. It's a public health disaster, actually, and we need to be aware. It's not always an easy subject to talk about because people love their devices, and we become so totally embroiled with our devices we can't imagine living without, but that's the problem. And we need to reduce exposure, shut off your routers, put your phone on airplane mode. I mean, these are, in the scheme of things, probably insignificant things at this point, but every little bit helps, right? Every little bit helps, and especially when you're sleeping at night.
I think I can tell you some things that I do, because I use the internet all the time because I have to for my research. Everything is wired. I do not have Wi-Fi in my house, and I have a wired connection I use a wired keyboard. I use a wired mouse. I use a printer that's wired. I don't have any wireless stuff here at all, and that makes a big difference. You know, when you have smart meters, you need to shield yourself from them. They can be quite dangerous.
I just want to say people can purchase Faraday cage devices to put over their smart meters. There are places you just search on Google. There are people that sell these Faraday-like cages, these metal mesh cages you put over your smart meters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're. You know, as I say, when I talk about this stuff, and I've done it many times to both lay audiences and many, many times to scientific audiences, I often say, hey, I know I sound like a cartoon figure with a long gray beard saying, waving a sign saying the end is coming, repent. And it sounds kind of crazy, but that is what the science. We are going very rapidly to the end of our time if we don't respond to this. I think we're going down, and we're going down quickly. And it's just absolutely stunning that anything like this could possibly be going on.
And unfortunately, we can't wake up from the nightmare because we are awake. This is happening. And that's why I'm so grateful to you, Dr. Paul, because you have been such a powerful voice in helping us to wake up, to start to take proactive measures, and to share the important message that you're sharing with us today. It's profound. People need to wake up to what's going on and to start doing as much as they can to create their own personal space. I mean, I'm wired as well. I have Ethernet and I have everything's wired, and the router that I do have goes, I shut it off at night. I never keep my phone in the bed. That is off all night long. I mean, there are things you can do, as well as the nutritional suggestions that you made available to us. So people need to wake up. People need to get into action. People need to share this information. I really hope everyone will share this conversation, because it'll help people to understand and convince the public at large what we're facing here. So I'm just so grateful to you and your courage to make this stand. I want to ask you one question before we go. Do you have a website we can send people to?
I had one, but I let it go because the person who was doing it for me couldn't do it anymore, so I gave up on it.
Okay.
No, I don't. But you know, there are well over 100,000 websites to talk about my research, so you can find
so
my stuff pretty easily. You have to spell my last name properly to find them. Pall.
I was about to do that. So it's Dr. Martin Paul, Pall, PhD. And I'm just so grateful to you for your courage, for your research, for the ability to explain what's going on, and the passion that you have in really helping people to wake up. So thank you so much, and it's always such a pleasure. It's so enlightening to talk to you. I'm very, very, very grateful for the work you're doing, Dr. Paul.
My pleasure.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me on What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman. Please join me next week, and until then, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.